Across the Western world, governments continue to search for far-reaching solutions to the global economic crisis, trying to hammer out some form of regulation for the banks and financial institutions at the heart of the crisis. But while there's plenty of media coverage about the way the recession has hit consumers, companies and national budgets in our developed countries, there's much less news coverage about the impact the crisis has had on the developing world, on the people living on less than a dollar or two a day.
The ones who pay the biggest price when we have a financial crisis are the poor.
Father Seamus Finn heads the Justice, Peace and Integrity of Creation Office for the Oblates of Mary Immaculate in Washington, D.C. He has a keen interest in ethical investment and corporate responsibility, working with other faith-based organizations to keep such ethical and moral issues on the agenda of governments, corporations and financial institutions. He believes it's vital to continue making the voice of the poor heard in the corridors of economic and political power.
This is an area that we have spent, and by we I'm talking about the Oblates and other religious orders in the States. We've spent a lot of time focusing on the global financial system in a variety of different sectors over the years, starting all the way back from apartheid issues to the Latin American debt issues. Founded, I think, on our belief that, you know, the global financial system is kind of, it's the vascular system of operations of commerce in the world. This is how people have access to loans. This is how they get credit if they want to open a small business. Even if you want to talk about microfinance or microcredit or small, medium type enterprises. And so we've been keenly interested about two things, about the fact that the system has to be reliable, and that it has to benefit, that the social purpose of the financial system is to help people to sustain their lives and the livelihoods of those who are dependent on them, and not to harm the earth in the process. And so the social purpose of the financial system is something that we're keenly concerned about. And then access to actual financial resources, whether it's a loan or credit, is the second piece. And I think we've been extremely concerned about the amount of speculation that's been introduced into the financial system and the excess profits that have been taken by some in the financial system, and what I would call the financialization of life and commodities in themselves. It's the financial sector continues to grow exponentially in most economies. And I think the issue, you put it alongside, it was easy maybe in some ways to look at apartheid or to look at Latin American debt and deal with Bank X or Bank Y or one government or another. When you put an overlay of that of globalization on top of that, and you put the global financial integration that's gone on in the last 25 years, then you really now do have a global financial system. It's got some basic, very important centers that differentiate it from the Eurozone to the US or to Asia. But then if it's all integrated, I think it's important to say, well, who is actually in charge? And who's actually setting the rules? And who's actually monitoring to see if the rules are obeyed? And I think one of my biggest concerns has been with the global financial system. You've got every country and every region wanting to do its own regulating and its own monitoring. And to a point that works. But we're now in a position in the present financial crisis that we're trying to pass some significant legislation in the US. And the banks are saying to us, well, if you pass the legislation, we're moving to the UK. Then if the UK suggests we're going to pass some legislation, they're saying, well, we might be moved to Frankfurt. And I was extremely disappointed the other day. The financial ministers of the G20 met, I believe, in Toronto, getting ready for the G20 meeting coming up. And they really could not agree on some kind of global financial authority, which I think the Holy Father calls for in the last encyclical. And some people equated it with a global government, which I don't think is not at all the case. But they were not able to agree that this needs to happen. So we continue to have, you know, what in the lingo is called regulatory arbitrage. You're going to go where you have the least regulation. And my biggest concern in this area is that this is what got us into trouble to begin with, is that if you don't have somebody verifying, you know, the facts and verifying the monitoring the behaviors, whether it's in the Eurozone or the U.S. or the global financial system, then it's ripe for exploitation, whether it's by motivation of greed or crime or whatever. And most particularly, the ones who pay the biggest price when we have a financial crisis are the poor, particularly the poor who may only be accessing $2 of credit a month. Most people on Wall Street that I know, they're not going without food and they're not going without the regular things that they have available. Their bonuses are going to sustain them quite well, and some of them are wealthy for many years into the future. So the issue becomes, how do you emphasize with them or bring their attention to the fact that the impact of what they're doing in capital markets, in trading, in their activities, are having huge impacts across the world. One of the obvious ones most recently was the amount of speculation in the derivatives market on, for instance, the price of food. I mean, we had food riots all over the world last year in terms of speculating on what rice is going to cost in a few months and driving up the price. Then, yeah, that might be fine for your investment and for the return on your investment, but in the person going to the market in Malawi or Zambia or in Asia to buy rice, they're going to have to say, well, where am I going to come up with the extra money to buy rice for today's food or for today's meals?
And yet you're saying that the lessons don't seem to have been learned from this past crisis, that people are not willing to make the necessary changes to stop this happening again.
I think individual countries have done a good job in certain sectors, but they're still looking out for their own interest, whether it's their own banks or their own service sectors and their own financial areas. What the absolute kind of level of collaboration and coordination at a regional and a global level is just not there. And in some ways, I think political leaders are maybe held captive on this. This has been an extremely difficult 2 years now. The crisis was in full bloom in September of 2008, so we're coming up on the second anniversary. There have been, you know, millions of people have lost their jobs and their livelihoods. Millions of people have lost their homes in the United States. The impact in terms of developing countries is immeasurable. So if I'm an elected leader and I'm looking to go to the next election, in some ways, yeah, I want to be reelected, and so I'm somehow held captive to these financiers and to the folks who run the financial system to say, well, need to spend more and to put more government money into the economy, so you'll create more jobs, but you'll create more debt. I don't find either the industry coming forward, and by that I mean the major world banks and banking centers, coming forward with a reliable proposal in terms of structure and regulation that would make the system more stable, more safe, and actually offer access to loans and to credit that people need. And on the political side, I'm not sure that the regulators, who the politicians are ultimately responsible for passing the laws and putting in place the regulations, I am not sure that they're convinced exactly what's the best thing. I mean, this is a financial system that grows very quickly, moves very rapidly, and they're not by training economists, so they're trying to come up with some solutions. And at the moment, based on recent events, I'm not terribly hopeful.
The church has been pressing for many years, though, for a closer look at these moral and ethical issues, which will ultimately also provide a safer future along these lines that you're talking about. What else can you do? I mean, it's quite a depressing picture, as you say, with little hope of reform.
I think from a church point of view, I think we've been pretty clear that we believe such things as greater transparency, accountability, and actual monitoring and disclosure are at least a good first step in terms of a financial system. So that, for instance, in the recent crisis, much of the problem was related to off-the-balance sheet liabilities. So we want the banks, the institutions, we want to bring all of their liabilities and their assets onto the balance sheet so you can actually see how much do they owe, how much do they have, and one gets a clear picture, and I think that's a basic principle that needs to be applied. I think the church has been clear, and I think maybe this is a new opportunity to try and explore this question of the virtue of solidarity by asking, perhaps in previous times we talked more about distributive justice and social justice. I think we need to kind of contemporaneize those principles and kind of say, you know, if we're going to have a global financial system, if we're going to have a global economy, what needs to be put in place so that most people have access to the kinds of credit that they need? And what does that mean in terms of the kind of regulation of markets? What does that mean in terms of the kinds of responsibilities corporation may have a license to operate. Does it have a social license to operate? How are they treating their clients? How are they treating their investors? How are they treating the local communities? And I think the church has continued to push that the investor, most of the investors tend to be in the north, are whether it's an individual investor or somebody in a pension fund scheme, they need to be more vigilant. That is not a question of just simply taking your investment and buying shares in a bank or putting it in there. You may also need to say, well, what's the bank doing with my money while it's there? And does the bank have a code of ethics? And if they do have a code of ethics or a human rights policy or a community relations policy, are they actually implementing it? And can I actually look and see, oh yeah, there's an example of when it was implemented. So I think the church's contribution on this can be, I think, to provide guidance on the principled level in terms of ethics and morality, but also I think to help people to become more active themselves as shareholders and as investors, and whether it's the local credit union or the bank or the multinational corporation, take the time to try and find out, you know, is this corporation actually contributing positively to humankind and producing a sustainable development kind of option for local communities and for regions.
Thanks there to Father Seamus Finn, who heads the Justice, Peace and Integrity of Creation Office for the Oblates of Mary Immaculate in Washington, D.C.